welcome to the Capcom podcast. I'm Amanda Fries. All right, so we are joined by Chris Bragg and Edward McKinley, who are part of the Capital team here at the Times Union. And we're doing a little bit of a debrief. We're waiting on results for many races that are relatively close because of there just being so many absentee ballots out there that still need to be counted. However, there certainly are some races that appear to be shaping up for Republicans, which wasn't initially anticipated. And you had the Republican committee chair, Nick Langworthy, as well as Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort, talking about how the Democrats were really confident that they were going to get this supermajority, and it didn't happen. Ed, I know you've done a lot of coverage when it comes to the supermajority here in the Senate that the Democrats were looking at. What are your thoughts here? Is there any opportunity for them to pull out a supermajority, or, you know, are they looking at, you know, maybe a couple of new seats, but that's about it?
So never say never. You know, there's a lot of absentee ballots, hundreds of thousands across the state that haven't been counted yet. And it's possible, even probable in some of the races, that that's going to be enough to overcome the vote count that the Republicans opened up a lead in on Election Day. But in a lot of the races, you know, the Republicans really seem to run ahead of where they thought they would be. And I think that the story in New York is pretty much the same as the story that we're seeing nationwide, which is that Democrats didn't have the big night that they were really hoping for and that many of them were expecting or thinking was a real, real possibility. And that the narrative could shift as some of the absentee ballots come in. But as it stands now, it doesn't look likely that they're going to take a supermajority this year.
Chris, what have you seen when it comes to, you know, the election results that are coming in? I know that you've checked on some of the local board of elections and the results that they've posted to kind of get a better understanding of some of these Senate races and where things are at.
You know, as Ed mentioned, the narrative was that the Democrats might even be able to pick up two seats to go from 40 to 42 and have a supermajority. You have to remember that 2018, when Democrats went from having, I think, 31 seats and being in the minority to having 40 seats was a huge gain. That was 9 seats during a year when Donald Trump wasn't at the top of the ticket. So there was a lot of Democratic enthusiasm against Trump, but not Trump voters coming out solely for him like some of them do. So it was actually maybe in some ways unrealistic that they were going to go up to 42 seats when you think about it now with the strength of Trump. But, you know, in any case, it was kind of strange where Democrats did well and Democrats did poorly. On Long Island, Democrats seem to perhaps have lost 3 of the seats that they picked up in 2018. 2 of those races are still really close. So we'll have to see how the absentee ballots come out. In the Hudson Valley, they might lose a seat. In Westchester, the former county executive, Rob Astorino, is ahead. And in Southern Berkeley, Andrew Gennardis, who was also a 2018 winner over a longtime incumbent, Marty Golden, looks like he could lose. But all those, you know, with Democrats expected to do well on absentee ballots, could be in play still for Democrats. But then they won probably 3 seats upstate, 2 in the Rochester area, and 1 that was held by a Republican also in Western New York. So it's kind of shifting from Democratic power downstate on Long Island up to upstate where Democrats previously only had a single state senator. So that could be a change in how they do policy when they get back in January.
And just to piggyback off what Chris said, by virtue of the fact that the Democrats had such a big night in 2018 to take so many seats and they had such a wide majority, the way the system is structured is just that when you have that many seats, you go into the election with a disadvantage to gain more seats because you have to defend so many more seats than your opponents did. So the Republicans look to be in a position that they might actually pick up a few seats this cycle. And that's largely going to be on the strength of taking back seats that the Democrats have won in recent years. And for many, many years from, you know, the early 20th century to like 2008, Republicans kind of had a stranglehold in the state Senate. So the fact that the Democrats, even after a night that we're basically describing as a tough night for them, where things didn't go their way, but they're still holding on to a sizable majority. If you'd asked somebody about that, you know, 20 years ago, they would have said that's unbelievable that they even have a majority at all.
One thing that's been interesting about the 2018 elections, which, as you know, because of what Ed mentioned about Republicans having held the majority for so long, is that the special interest groups in Albany, like the kinds of groups that are transactional and really don't care which party is in the majority, that just want to pick the winner, those groups for the first time really were all on the Senate Democrats' side, like the real estate industry in New York City that's always given millions of dollars to help the Senate Republicans, only went for the Senate Democrats and actually lost the races that they tried to get into. Charter school supporters, always with the Senate Republicans, millions of dollars this year only helped Senate Democrats. And those were on the races on Long Island where Democrats didn't do so well. So, you know, it's just like a lot of interests were stacked against the Republicans. And I don't know if those groups actually ended up making smart bets or not. We'll see. You know, it was all flipped upside down as opposed to how it usually has been.
One of the big questions to answer here, too, is like, what does this mean practically in terms of how the legislation might shape out next session? And I think that the interesting thing to see will be what the appetite will be in the legislature to stand up to Cuomo next session. I think that if they had taken a supermajority, there would have been conversations that would have been had about, okay, the Assembly is a supermajority, the Senate is a supermajority, now we can, in theory, do what we want, even if Cuomo doesn't agree with us. And now those conversations won't be forced by nature of the fact that they have a power that they didn't have before, but it'll be interesting to see to what degree those conversations are still had.
And also to keep in mind, especially on Long Island and downstate, Republicans are really kind of crediting some of the civil unrest that we've seen in cities, particularly New York City, but across New York, as well as in cities in other states, along with bail and discovery reforms that were passed earlier this year, and then saw some changes in the budget in April. They're really crediting those changes as a reason for voters to come out and vote for a Republican, because the Republicans have been very vocal opponents of the bail reform and the criminal justice reforms that we've seen this year either take effect or even been passed. So they definitely feel like some of the issues that they've championed from the very beginning have helped them stay afloat. And certainly that's going to be something to watch next year as they enter budget negotiations to see what other things might be changed, because we all know that New York's budget includes a lot of policy decisions along with the financial.
On that point you make, Mandy, about criminal justice reform and bail reform and things like that being an advantage to the Senate Republicans, the reason they were able to get that message out so much was because of this $4 million plus dollars spent by Ron Lauder, the cosmetics heir to the Estee Lauder fortune. I don't know about you guys, but I found this conspiracy theory that was in a few articles about Ron Lauder being in cahoots with Cuomo to try to prevent the Senate Democrats from having the supermajority really interesting. There seem to be some reasons to disbelieve it, like he's a longtime Republican donor and a conservative spender. On the other hand, he is apparently close to Cuomo, and he didn't apparently spend a single dime trying to beat Rob Astorino in that state Senate race, which is interesting because Rob Astorino, if he wins the Senate race, could be a 2022 challenger to Cuomo. So him winning a Senate seat is not good. You kind of might read something into the fact that Lauder then didn't spend against in favor of Astorino. So I found that a really interesting subplot of this cycle.
We should note, by the way, that it's not like Governor Cuomo didn't campaign and help raise money for down ballot Senate races. He did. If you speak to his people, you know, they say, look at all this campaigning we've done. Isn't it obvious how much we want the Democrats to have a supermajority? I think maybe they might be protesting a little bit too much, but I'll leave that to posterity to decide. But one point that Amanda brought up that I think is important is the fact that the Republicans think that they have winning political issues based off of some of the more progressive policies that have been enacted over the last 2 years by Democrats. And they don't believe that those winning political issues are just constrained to the down to the state level races. I spoke with Mark Molinaro this morning, who was the Republican candidate in 2018, and he was saying that he thinks that in the New York 19 congressional race, which was Representative Antonio Delgado, who was elected in 2018, he's a Democrat, running against a first-time candidate for federal office, Kyle Vandewater. And the backstory here is that, you know, Republicans in the area basically didn't think Vandewater was that great of a candidate. He wasn't the first choice. Molinaro was publicly flirting with a bid for the seat, and a lot of people thought he was going to run and would be the better candidate. But instead, Vandewater ran. He had this messy primary. There was a write-in campaign for another Republican. And when the dust has settled on election night, it's a lot tighter than people had expected. So Republicans are heartened to see results like that. They've had strong results in other congressional races, federal Congress races are across the state. But they feel that they're seeing good results, not just in the state legislature races, but also in the federal races in New York.
I want to switch gears because I feel like this is the elephant in the room and it's a little bit more fun. During Nick Langworthy's press conference today, he was very critical of departing Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan and characterized him leaving for a new job. Originally, early on in the year, announced that he wasn't going to be seeking re-election and then stepped down as the minority leader. And Rob Ort took the helm over the summer, I believe in July.
As I said earlier, I mean, the Senate conference got abandoned by its leadership. And that's why I really want to make emphasis of saluting Rob Ort and for the job he's done here.
He gave a lot of kudos to Ort for being able to generate interest and get people to run on the Republican line for these state legislative races. I don't know if either of you have any thoughts as to whether that's a fair accusation. I know, Edward, you kind of came in near midway through all of this, but anybody have any thoughts on that particular criticism?
Well, I think it's fair to say that if there was widespread thought that the Republicans were going to take back the state Senate any one of these years, you probably wouldn't be seeing as many retirements as you're seeing. There's a lot of Republican state senators that are stepping down, including the former minority leader. So I think it's definitely fair to say that they're not perceiving their long-term prospects as very rosy, which makes the results of this election maybe even a little bit more surprising.
I don't know exactly why Nick Langworthy would go after Flanagan. I mean, it doesn't seem to have a lot of constructive value to it from what I can see. Nick Langworthy's from the Buffalo area. Rob Ort is also an upstate guy. There's a longstanding tension between upstate Republicans and Republicans on Long Island. And of course, John Flanagan was the leader from Long Island and before him, Dean Skelos. So I don't know if that's part of it, that there's just still some tension from that, or if it's something more personal. Obviously, Flanagan, even before leaving, had his struggles. He went to rehab two different times over the last 2 years, I think, that he was there. So, you know, there were some grumblings already about Flanagan, but I don't know exactly why Langworthy would, you know, rub salt in those wounds at this point, but I guess he did, so.
So, yes, when it comes to both Rob Ort and Nick Langworthy being from the upstate area, Rob Ort had mentioned just today that there was a concern that the conference and the legislature would become too New York City centric, which is often a concern heard by many legislators of both sides of the aisle.
We want to make sure that upstate New York, that Long Island, that police departments, that, you know, roads in Long Island and Western New York and the North Country, veterans agents, groups, you know, not-for-profits in those areas, that they have strong representation. Because I think even for people electing a Democrat from upstate, the feeling was that it would be New York City that would ultimately, you know, when there was push came to shove, New York City would be the winner in that discussion.
I guess we'll have to wait and see all of this means, but Senator Ort has really made a promise that there's going to be, at least on the Republican conference side, a more holistic approach to making sure that each corner of New York is receiving resources, and that policies as well as budgeting doesn't skew too much in favor of downstate versus upstate.
One thing with the Senate Democrats having 40 members the last 2 years is that that's such a large conference, and they want to get all those people reelected. So that's a number of members coming from outside New York City whose needs have to be listened to. And so, you know, if there's actually fewer members in the Senate Democratic Conference and you get rid of a few people from Long Island and other swing seats, like, does that make the conference pay more attention to New York City and less attention to the rest of the parts of the state if there's not, members that they have to worry about on Long Island or, you know, the Hudson Valley? That's a possibility, even though the Democrats might lose seats because of some of those downstate-centric policies this year.
Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this Capital Confidential podcast, a special edition kind of debriefing you on elections. And we'll continue to provide you the latest as votes are counted. Go to timesunion.com for the latest. I'm Amanda Fries, joined by Edward McKinley and Chris Bragg, and this is the Capital Confidential podcast.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.